Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. The latest on the Israel-Hamas war. China's leader stresses food security, and North Korea continues to flout UN sanctions. First, in the Israel-Hamas war, when the UN Security Council resolved on March 24 by a 14-0 vote with the U.S. abstaining to demand an immediate ceasefire, an immediate freeing of hostages, and a major increase in humanitarian aid deliveries, how did the concerned parties react? The Israeli government, in a peak, decided not to send a delegation to Washington that was supposed to engage with the U.S. national security officials on the Rafah incursion. Hamas also has rejected the resolution's demands. It wants a permanent ceasefire, assurances on humanitarian aid deliveries, and the safe return to the north of Gaza's displaced citizens. Negotiations continue in Cairo. Despite the Biden-Netanyahu rift, the president has given the green light to yet another arms delivery, this one reportedly worth as much as $18 billion. The new arms packages include more than 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 500 500-pound bombs, as well as F-15 jet fighters. Biden acknowledged, quote, the pain being felt by Arab Americans over the war, but that pain did not keep him from authorizing another weapons delivery. The decision comes as Francesca Albanese, the UN special reporter on human rights in the Palestinian territories, called for an arms embargo on Israel, saying in her report there were reasonable grounds to believe that Israel is guilty of genocide. And finally, on the Israeli political front, Prime Minister Netanyahu faces not only 4 days of mass protests, but also a major crisis over the role of the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredi, in military service. Since Israel's founding, the Haredi, who now constitute about 13% of Israel's population, have been exempt from military service and have had their own educational system in return for supporting a secular state. Now, in the wake of the October 7 Hamas attack, demands have grown to remove those privileges. That would probably end ultra-Orthodox support of Netanyahu's government. On the other hand, if an agreement is reached that would extend those privileges, his non-religious supporters might rebel. China's leader stresses food security. Food security has historically been a major concern of China's leaders. In more recent years, as supply chains have become less reliable, tensions with the West have increased, Chinese in farm areas have been drawn to the cities, and water supplies have become scarcer, food security is very much on the political agenda. That was clear from Xi Jinping's recent visit to Hunan province. He seemed to make a particular point about the province's role in China's food security, saying, with a population of over 1.4 billion, China's food security must be ensured by ourselves. Chinese people's rice bowls should primarily contain Chinese grain, unquote. It is necessary to build high-standard farmland, he said, promote moderate-scale operations, strengthen policy support and demonstration guidance, increase the promotion of better quality varieties of seeds, quality machinery, and quality practice methods. Make efforts in meticulous farming in order to further increase both the yield and quality of grain, allowing grain producers to prosper, thereby further attract more farmers to participate in the development of modern, large-scale agriculture. Finally, he said Hunan province should shoulder the heavy responsibility of safeguarding national food security, and called on the region to, quote, accelerate breakthroughs in core technologies in key fields such as the seed industry and agricultural machinery. North Korea continues to flout UN sanctions. On March 18 and 20, two UN reports highlighted North Korea's evasion of UN sanctions and its deplorable human rights conditions. On sanctions, a UN panel of experts released its final report for 2023. The report said the DPRK, that is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, had, quote, continued to flout Security Council sanctions. It further developed nuclear weapons and produced nuclear fissile materials, although its last known nuclear test took place in 2017, unquote. North Korea launched, quote, at least 7 ballistic missiles, 1 3-stage intercontinental ballistic missile, 1 possible intermediate-range ballistic missile, and 5 short-range ballistic missiles. It also placed a military observation satellite into orbit using ballistic missile technology and added a tactical nuclear attack submarine to its missile arsenal. North Korea also evaded UN sanctions on petroleum imports, and its illegal exports of conventional arms and munitions is under investigation. Nevertheless, within the past week, Russia has withdrawn support from the panel of experts, ending its over 20 years of reporting on North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. Also being investigated by the UN are 58 cyber attacks by North Korea on companies that deal in cyber currency, $3 billion worth, and North Korean overseas workers who are earning money in violation of sanctions. The earnings from these activities and the country's access to the international financial system are believed tied to North Korean military budgeting. On human rights conditions in the DPRK, the UN Special Rapporteur reported that it had been 10 years since a UN Commission of Inquiry had first concluded that, quote, systemic, widespread, and gross human rights violations have been and are being committed by the DPRK, its institutions, and officials, and such violations constitute crimes against humanity. The Commission recommended that the country, quote, undertake profound political and institutional reforms, and that the international community take several actions, including referral to the International Criminal Court. That report was followed up by another in 2017 by a group of independent experts, quote, to seek accountability for human rights violations, in particular those amounting to crimes against humanity, unquote. Almost needless to say, the Special Rapporteur was unable to report any progress either on ameliorating human rights conditions in North Korea or gaining accountability for the violations. In other news, a Palestinian poll on the war and the future. In my Tuesday broadcast, I reported on the results of a poll of Palestinian opinion conducted by a highly respected, independent Palestinian research organization. About 1,500 people in Gaza and the West Bank were polled. In case you missed it, here are some of the principal findings. 60% of all Gazans say a member of their family has been killed during the current war. Almost 2/3 blame Israel for their suffering, and most of the others blame the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, only 9% blame Hamas. While support for Hamas's October 7 attack remains high, Palestinian support in the West Bank has in fact dropped by 11 points, while support in the Gaza Strip has increased by 14 points. Almost all Palestinians think Israel is committing war crimes, while almost all believe Hamas is not committing war crimes. Moreover, more than 90% believe that Hamas did not commit any atrocities against Israeli civilians during its October 7 attack. Only 1 in 5 Palestinians has seen videos showing atrocities committed by Hamas. 38% of Gazans expect the war to continue and increasingly believe Hamas will win the war. 60% now think Hamas will be in control after the war. Gazans' support for continued Hamas control over the Gaza Strip has increased to almost 50%, a 14% rise. Palestinians in the West Bank have very different views, mostly believing Hamas will not win the war and will not be in control of the Gaza Strip. And finally, two findings that are especially important. Support for the two-state solution has increased significantly, and support for armed struggle has dropped significantly. However, the increased support for the two-state solution, while dramatic, came only from the Gaza Strip, a 27-point increase, while remaining stable in the West Bank. New security laws in Hong Kong. As though repressive laws in 2020 designed to lock up pro-democracy protesters were not enough, the Beijing-controlled Hong Kong legislature passed another national security law. This one casts a much wider net. As John Lee, the Hong Kong chief executive, said, the new laws would, quote, allow Hong Kong to effectively prevent and put a stop to espionage activities, the conspiracies and traps of intelligence units, and the infiltration and damage of enemy forces, unquote. One would think Hong Kong is besieged with spies and other kinds of foreign interference, but it isn't. It's just that critics and protesters remain. But the new law will also affect multinational investors, journalists, in fact, anyone who might be involved with foreigners in a way that could be construed as external interference or sabotage. From Beijing's viewpoint, the new security law accomplishes what a previous attempt to pass one in 2003 did not. On that occasion, the population rose up in a massive display of opposition, the so-called Umbrella Revolution, that forced the authorities to back off. Hong Kong was once known for its respect of human rights, its feisty politics, and its home to foreign investment. Now it mirrors the mainland, which recently passed its own anti-espionage legislation and has put foreign firms under the microscope. As one U.S. professor puts it, quote, "The Hong Kong leaders seem to be looking for ways to signal their fealty to the government's national security agenda and to ensure that they are demonstrating no daylight between themselves and the Chinese government." What does China want? Two seemingly contradictory views. Do China's leaders want a world in which their country is regarded as a peer of the U.S. and is seriously interested in finding common ground? Or do they want to dominate in Asia and find ways to get rid of the U.S. presence there? Xi Jinping has said on numerous occasions that he favors the former view. Most recently, he repeated it in a meeting with senior U.S. business executives and other influentials on U.S.-China relations. According to Xinhua, the New China News Agency, Xi emphasized the importance of a positive China-U.S. relationship, saying, quote, "The two countries' respective success is an opportunity for each other. As long as both sides see each other as partners and show mutual respect, coexist in peace, and cooperate for win-win results, China-U.S. relations will get better." And as he has said many times before, Xi observed that China-U.S. relations are improving, but can do better provided the U.S. does not hinder China's development and pursues cooperative international policies. But the other day, we heard Zhao Leji, a member of Xi's inner circle, the standing committee of the Chinese Communist Party Politburo, voice what amounts to an Asia for Asians view that suggested that the Chinese aim is actually to end the U.S. alliance system in the Pacific. That view was last heard early in Xi's career as leader, but not recently. In a speech at the annual Boao Asia Forum on March 28, Zhao said, quote, "We must always keep in mind, in our own hands, the future of lasting peace and security in Asia and pass on the torch of peace from generation to generation. We should jointly maintain security in Asia." What should we make of such statements? China's leaders surely don't expect to drive the U.S. out of Asia, but I think they do hope to weaken U.S. alliances that impede Chinese influence, such as with the Philippines and Japan. By the way, the American visitors who met with Xi did not do themselves credit by showering praise on China and its leader, at least according to the New China News Agency. The group is said to have praised the, quote, "extraordinary leadership of President Xi and China's economic resilience and vitality." They reportedly vowed to, quote, "maintain their strong commitment to the Chinese market." Xi assured the U.S. visitors that, quote, "China is planning and implementing a series of major steps for comprehensively deepening reform and steadily fostering a market-oriented, law-based, and world-class business environment. This will create broader development space for U.S. and other foreign businesses." Just what they wanted to hear. Finally, Niger ends its security agreement with the United States. The coup government in Niger is ending its security agreement with the United States that had allowed operation of a major counterterrorism base in the north of the country. Since the July 2023 coup, the Niger government has ousted French forces and now seems about to force the U.S. to dismantle its very expensive base, which houses some 1,000 military and civilian personnel. Closure of the base would be a major blow to drone surveillance operations against jihadist groups in the Sahel region of Central Africa. It would also signal that the Niger government is falling under Russian influence, just as has happened with Niger's neighbors, Burkina Faso and Mali. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.